The bliss of the abyss.
Once upon a time in a land far away, a poor farmer and his wife lived all alone. They were very lonesome.
Abyss
with Robert Newmark Jones. Welcome to the Bliss of the Abyss with your host Ruskin Denmark. Robert Newmark Jones, it's me. I'm back like Beavis and Butthead is back. That's right, they're rebooting Beavis and Butthead. Can you believe it? Is it time? Just what the world has been crying out for. This week on The Bliss of the Abyss, we have President Obonjo coming on to talk about the year anniversary of the attempted coup of the Laughter Republic. It's quite a tale, so strap yourself in for that coming up in a minute. But first, I've got to tell you about Hastings. Go to Hastings, it's great. That's my that's my recommendation. What, did you want more? Go to Hastings. It's really great. How about that? There we go. I doubled down. I told you everything you need to know. So I'm not going to waste too much time on this intro here. I've got a really, really good conversation with President Obonjo coming up. And we talk about all different kinds of things. We talk about the attempted coup. We talk about comedy during lockdown. We talk about Zoom gigs, drive-in gigs, and what he would do if he was in charge of this country. Before we go into that conversation, just quickly, if you wouldn't mind, in the show notes, I'm going to put a link to the Save Live Comedy campaign. We discuss it a bit during our phone call, but the UK government currently does not class live comedy as one of the acts. So the big rescue stimulus, £1.57 billion that was announced, is not going to help the comedy industry at present. This is obviously a ridiculous state of affairs. So many of the beloved international acts and national and even smaller, like regional acts, a lot of them are born and bred on the live circuit scene. And they cut their teeth and they pay their dues gigging. And it's a lifeblood of this country. A lot of talent goes through it. I've seen a lot of people who are now big names starting very small and becoming very big. And where else to hone their craft than live comedy, than pubs, clubs, theatres, and anywhere that's a dedicated comedy venue currently is not getting the support that it needs to survive. And I think within the next year, it's something like 70 to 80%, maybe 77. Maybe I'm just making that number up. I don't know, but I seem to remember thinking it, reading it somewhere. Being threatened with closure. So it's really important, actually, that we do what we can. I think this country, actually, has really come together and rallied behind some really important things during this lockdown. We've had the NHS clapping. No, we've had a massive groundswell of people supporting the NHS, and the government has sometimes lagged behind that. But in terms of what people's priorities are, and we've had a lot of job retention schemes, we've had furloughing stuff, we've had self-employed people being given money, we've had now the arts finally being given money. I think it's overdue that comedy is actually recognised and put in the arts, and it also gets its own lifeline now. It needs it. It's ridiculous that it doesn't have it. So, without any further ado, please sign that and please enjoy my conversation with the president, dictator for life of the Laughter Republic, President Obonjo.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Can't complain.
Good. Welcome to the Bliss of the Abyss, President Obonjo.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that you have called me.
Yes, well, it's a very prestigious occasion. It's a year, almost to the day, that there was an attempted coup upon your life, upon your dictatorship, benevolent dictatorship, sorry, I should just say.
Upon our people as well.
us honorary Laughter Republic citizens. Now, seeing as it's been a year to the day, may I suggest some kind of official parade, maybe a public holiday?
Look, if you have been following the Laughter Republic Broadcasting Corporation, because we took over BBC Studios and E4, they no longer exist. I made an announcement a couple of days ago that we are going to be celebrating and marking the occasion, and that 17th of July is now a national holiday.
Oh, my God.
And I will be making a special broadcast on the 17th of July, 2020, which is, I believe, on Friday.
That is on Friday. That's 5 days from now as we record. Can you tease any of the information that's going to be in this special broadcast?
I don't. My people have said I shouldn't reveal, because one of the things that we found out when the Comedy Bureau Agency and the FBI investigated what happened last year is we have to be careful what information we share.
Right.
Because we don't know whether these people are still very much wanting to repeat what they did last year.
I see. They wouldn't dare again, but I do understand what you're saying. Loose lips sink ships.
Yeah,
so
I think all that your listeners need to know.
Yes.
Is look out on the 17th of July. They can come to my fan page or my Twitter, and I will be making a special broadcast to celebrate a special day, not just in the history of that republic, but a special day in the history of Britain.
Oh, it's a very big statement. For those people, idiots, fools, who do not know all the details of what we're talking about, can you fill them in with a bit of the origin story of how there was an attempted coup upon you?
Well, I remember the day very clearly, my friend. On the 17th of July, 2019, I visited the Twitter, because my people at times are always saying that I need to keep up to speed, and I've been trying to compete with Donald Trump in terms of getting more followers. So I remember that day very well. I decided to check my Twitter account, and lo and behold, I saw an article written by Chotul magazine. And Chotul, as you know, is a comedy trade magazine.
Comedy hub, all things comedy.
Only comedians read it, actually.
Yeah.
No one else reads it apart from comedians.
Yeah,
not
that's
even
part of the problem.
But that is another matter. And when I read it, I just realized that, wow, there was this splash article that basically said E4 is launching a new African dictator TV show. And, you know, lots of column inches, my friend. And I was reading it, and I had no idea it was about me. Until I saw the reference below that basically said this character is very similar to the character that President Obonjo has been performing over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had all sorts of mixed emotions. Number one, I texted myself, wow, this is really, really interesting. This is an interesting development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they make a mistake? And because the photograph of who the new African dictator was, and obviously he's black, so I just thought maybe they made a mistake and they chose the wrong black person, because you know they can never ever recognize black people.
You thought they've just pulled the wrong foot, like that time they got the taxi driver on to talk about economic policy, and
I just thought they had done the same. At one point I thought, okay, maybe it's not me, maybe they've given it to Lenny Henry. I could understand that, but it wasn't Lenny Henry. They actually gave it to this character called Colonel Banjoko.
Colonel Banjoko. Now, Colonel is a rank way below president as well.
Yeah, and I just posted on Twitter, interesting comments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't even understand the impact of what they had done.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't actually as angry as the people, my people, the white soldiers within the comedy industry, tweeting left, right, and center. Before I knew what was happening, the thing had mushroomed into Justice for Obonjo. I then realized that, wow, they actually stole my car. You know what it is? Something's happening to you, but you deny it. But this can't be true. This must be just a dream.
Yeah.
Before I knew what happened, it was all over Twitter. My people were out there protesting. You know, it was, you know, what was really interesting about last year was the fact that I am not supposed to be the sort of dictator who is fighting for justice, but for equality. And all of a sudden, I am out there and people are fighting for me. It made a mockery of democracy.
Right. It, in fact, if anything, it proved that dictatorship is a more efficient way of running the country.
Most definitely, my friend, because I know if that happened in a democratic country, and I must say Britain isn't democratic, but you know what I mean? Yeah. They would have had to pass a law. They would have written a white paper or green paper. We need to investigate. They would debate it in parliament before they... This happened so swiftly. I mean, it was almost like Black Lives Matter, you know, karate comedy Lives Matter. It went out of my hands. It was no longer about me being angry, but it was about the comedy community being very, very angry.
Well,
I knew what was happening. Someone from my Facebook contact had been in touch with me to say, look, I know how we could possibly resolve this. Do you want to meet BBC Studios?
Ooh.
I was shocked.
That was quick. How quickly did it happen from the news being announced to someone being in touch with you?
So the news was, the news came out on the 17th of July.
Yeah.
By the 19th of July, someone had been in touch with me.
There we go.
Because the Twitter storm was unbelievable because they had damaged their brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said he's a fictional character. President Obama is a fictional character. You know, exiled. President Obama is exiled. Bombastic. Yes, they even stole. They even stole my comedy creator's name. My comedy creator's name is Bankole. They turned that to Banjoko.
I mean, it's crazy. It's so flagrant. And if there's one thing that the comedy community cannot stand, it's injustice. Like, I think comics are obsessed with justice.
Yeah.
So 2 days later, BBC Studios get in touch with you. They want to have a sit down. They want to work out what's going on. What do you say?
I can't really go into the details of it
because
we are not releasing. I certainly am not releasing the details of the conversation until 30 years later. However, all I can confidently say is that I met with BBC Studios and we could not reach an agreement.
Oh, no.
Yeah. However, what they did was they did the pilot while I was in Edinburgh on my speaking engagement. But my understanding was the pilot was shit. The pilot was shit. Sorry for my French. the pilot was no good. And I don't think they have been able to broadcast it and commission it as a result.
No.
Besides, I was ready to fight tooth and nail. I would have got Donald Trump, Kim Jong-un, the Chinese leader. We would have made sure that there was a protest at the BBC if they went ahead with the commission.
Right. Now, I've also tried to find tapes, and I've tapped up my contacts, and no one seems to have any tapes of it. I think it was just sort of, they filmed it, they watched it back, and they burned all the evidence straight away. It seems like it was a miscarriage of justice in every way. A miscarriage?
You know what's really interesting? I have to be entirely honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
When I started my own investigation, I was almost like Inspector Columbo. I did my own investigation, and I have to say to you, I was quite surprised by the number of people who knew about this story. I am very surprised, still surprised, by the number of people who knew this was happening. Yeah, and it's made me a bit paranoid. Yeah, because some people knew that this was happening. They never said anything to me, even Churchill. When Churchill actually made that article and published it, they never even contacted me, but they referenced me in that article.
Right.
I found that really, really odd.
I find that very strange, definitely.
Yeah.
And did you have any contact with Samson, who was...
No. I didn't have any contact with Samson, but I have to say this to you.
Yeah.
One of the things that I did, which people were saying was good leadership. was the fact that you know how toxic the comedy industry is, especially when it comes to film. A lot of people did not know that he wasn't a comedian. He's just a comedy actor. Lots of comedians were attacking him on Twitter. I had to ensure that my people produced a press statement, and this is real. We produced a press statement to say, leave him alone.
Mm.
From what we can gather, it's not him that we should be attacking, but actually, we should be attacking the TV executives.
Yeah, right. Although,
and they stopped attacking him.
Yeah, your loyal army backed off. Yeah, somehow he was just pushed to the forefront. But it's like in any corporation, it's like someone is put forward to take the bullet, but the real truth is hidden a few layers back, and it's the people making the decisions and pulling the strings, isn't it?
Yeah, but for me, it is more about the fact that I have to say to you, some people, you just mentioned it, you said you've been in touch with your contacts.
Mm.
I don't have those sort of contacts with the BBC because I'm a dictator.
Right.
However, I know people who are connected. Yeah. I also know people who were working for the BBC who were quietly supporting me during that campaign last year, Justice for Bonja. So to be honest with you, it's made me really, really paranoid about people. I'm not saying I don't trust people, but I'm very, very suspicious now.
Right.
You know, you can't go through, because I almost lost 10 years of work that I have done.
I mean, if it had actually, if it had been commissioned and turned into a show and become a hit, there was a real possibility that it would have sort of overshadowed the last decade of your work.
Yeah, exactly. And what would have happened, even though, you know what was really interesting, is the support was both positive and negative.
Mm.
The positive outweighed the negative from the comedy industry.
Mm.
But there were a number of people who were saying to me, not even thinking about my mental state, but they were writing on Twitter, what is he supposed to do now? 10 years of his work is gone. How is he going to recover? But actually, I saw it. I'm going to fight tooth and nail. I know what sacrifices have made over the last 10 years. Yeah, I'm not going to let this ride. Even if it kills me, I'd probably be the first dictator that they said died because of comedy. I was prepared to go tooth and nail. Yeah, tooth and nail, my friend. You know, because I am the original African dictator. The only one in the UK performing comedy. Someone said to me, one of the positives is this. Someone said to me, if you are performing comedy in the UK and you don't know President Obonjo, then you're not doing comedy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah? That's, I'm not bragging here.
No. It's just true. That's why when I heard the news about it and looked up Samson, I was like, oh, he didn't maybe know, because he's not a stand-up. Like, actually, he probably is a bit innocent in this. Like, he acts in funny things on TV, but that's not the same thing as being on the circuit or knowing people performing in clubs, doing mics, etc. You know, it's a different world. The comedy industry, like you say, it's like part of the reason it's toxic at times is because it's insular. You know, a lot of people know everyone, and there's a lot of things going on that we wish were different, but have been that way for a long time, and we don't have the power to change.
As the days go by, I have flashbacks, both positive and negative, about the old incident. Because look, 10 years of your work was almost taken away from you. Can you imagine what that would have meant? However, what's really interesting is they've just recently, as you know, there's a campaign because COVID has disseminated the comedy industry.
Yeah.
This campaign called Save
Live Comedy. I'm gonna attach it to this episode.
What I can reveal is they think, when I say they, TV executives actually believe that the live comedy circuit is full of itself. It's in its own bubble. And, you know, it's not really important. However, what you would have noticed from the Save Live campaign, all those TV comics who tweeted about the campaign actually said, I started my comedy career in the live comedy circuit.
Mm.
So we are important.
Mm.
Not everybody is going to be able to go on TV, but we are the basis and foundation for TV comedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it is a different skill. But you learn the act of performing comedy in the circuit.
Yes.
So when I was reading some of the comments, the negative flashbacks of those discussions I had with the TV executives got me really, really angry, because they're now saying, we're saving, nobody's saying save TV comedy. People are saying save live comedy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it does make sense, because I also work in theatre, and obviously we you know, that industry has been really hit hard by COVID and all of that stuff. But the difference is, and some people might not know this, is that the UK government does not currently class stand-up comedy as an art form. So that big grant, that $1.57 billion for live entertainment, none of that is going to comedy. It's a joke.
I will ask you this question, and I'm not gloating, because I'm part of the comedy industry. Even though people say, I don't know why people call me a comedian, I don't see myself as a comedian. I'm just a president who gives funny speeches and people start laughing. I don't know why they laugh. But on a serious note, I will say to you, you know that the comedy industry is full of left-wing comics.
Yes, yeah? There's a lot.
You have more left-wing comics
than
right-wing
100%,
comics.
100%, yeah. Yep.
Now, do you honestly think that the Tory government will support the live comedy industry?
I know. What can we do? What can we do to make them do it, though?
Well, we have to try.
We have to try.
It makes you question, especially when you have a situation where some comedians, if you leave it to me, I am the opposition leader of the British democracy. You know, and all these people who criticize the British government, are they really helping when they go on stage? That's just meant to be a joke. But on a serious note, I think there are real issues. I think there are real issues in terms of the government wanting... some argue that it's not an art form, but it's entertainment. We are supporting... Do you know how many people we have helped in terms of their mental health when they go out to gigs?
Yeah.
I think it is snobbery by the British government.
I think it's snobbery as well.
Not to keep the money. And I have to say to you, the British government is likely to be the first government to experience a coup because they are not supporting live comedy.
Now, maybe don't announce a coup on the podcast. Maybe, allegedly, there might be a coup. Allegedly, you know.
Well, okay, that's allegedly. Just... anyone who takes what I've said seriously, then there's a problem. They haven't got a sense of humor.
I think this campaign, actually, the Save Live Comedy campaign, I think it's got a lot of momentum behind it. And part of the reason that the arts just got that package was because there was so much momentum, there were big voices behind it. And hopefully, with enough pressure, something will change and there will be, some move forwards. I mean, I noticed that you're going to a drive-in gig, aren't you, this evening? Have you done any Zoom gigs? Have you done any driving gigs before? How's that been for you?
Well, interesting enough, my people called me today because I have a Sunday to rest. And it's Sunday to rest. I'm not even making love to my wife. I just like to rest. However, someone called me today and said there is some complimentary tickets to go and watch a drive-in gig not far from where I live in Luton. So I'm going there to have a look. Zoom gigs, I haven't put myself out there, so I don't apply for Zoom gigs. People actually ask me to come and perform. I've done probably about 5 Zoom gigs. Out of 5, 4 have really been really, really good. I think Zoom gigs are good. I think that's the way to go. What really irritates me is the fact that I see all these audiences. They are looking at my cotton and they're criticizing my cotton. They're not even getting up to pledge allegiance to me. Because normally in a live comedy scene, they will get up and pledge allegiance. They're holding a glass of wine, sitting on their chairs.
I know.
Waiting for me to perform. I think that is a bit insulting for my presidency, but that is the way it goes.
It's the way isn't it? Yeah, you're not able to control them as much, you know?
Yeah, but that's the way it goes. I remember performing. I went to go and see my mom. And when I was there to go and see my mom, I had a Zoom gig. So I had to do the Zoom gig in her house. And believe it or not, I wore the uniform to my mom's place. She thought I was really, really mad. But look, what's wrong with you? Right? I did this to entertain my friends. And you know, you've seen me perform, and you know, I'm bombastic, and you know, I do what I need to do. And I was doing the gig in her room, and she asked me to keep quiet because she was watching Donald Trump.
Oh my God!
Yeah, you know.
Wow.
You know, my mom doesn't appreciate my comedy.
Well. No, it's often the way, though, isn't it? It's like you're doing the same thing as someone else, but because it's your mom, she's like, oh, quiet down, Abonjo. I'm watching, you know, fucking idiot Trump over here talk his nonsense with his tiny hands. So you actually, that's interesting, because I've spoke to a few comedians and a lot of them seem frustrated by the Zoom gigs, but you say you've actually had, I've got a question. Can you tell... You know, when you're crushing, obviously when you're live, you can tell when you're killing, because there's that vibe in the air, the laughs start to roll, you start to tag on top. But with that, with the Zoom and the slight delay and the being isolated, can you feel it as much? Like that's what puts me off.
Look, my friend, you know, what's really interesting is that, like I said to you, you are asking me questions about performing comedy, you know, because I don't see myself as a comedian, but, you know, I will answer your question. You see, this is the thing. I think people need to understand is what they should treat Zoom gigs like when they first started their first gig. What was it like when you started your first gig? What was it like when you did your first open mic gig? You were worried. You were scared. You didn't know what you were doing. But it does get better. That's point number one.
Right.
Point number two, depending on who is running the gig, that's the key thing. Some comedy promoters have been able to find a way of making sure that when you are performing, you can hear the laughter so they don't mute people. Yeah, that's point number two. Mm. Point number three, if you are a real comic and you have been performing comedy for a number of years, you will know where your punchlines are, don't you?
Yes, yeah? Of course.
The whole idea is when you're delivering your gig on the Zoom, pause as soon as you deliver your punchline
right.
to see whether you will get laughter.
That's it. So you trust in the material.
You have to trust your material. If you do not trust your material, you are going to die on your ass on a Zoom gig, and you will have a Zoom funeral.
Funeral right there and then. And have you been performing any sort of COVID material, or has it?
I try, because this is the thing. I think what makes my comedy unique is that I don't follow what other people do. Because it is so obvious that everybody will want to talk about the lockdown. Yeah?
Yeah, of course.
I try to make it different. I don't want to talk about it. Okay, fine. I have a joke about General COVID. I have a joke about the fact that this is the first time a civilian prime minister has put me under house arrest. Yeah? That's the lockdown. And it's no coincidence that when you put a military dictator under house arrest, you end up in hospital. Yeah? Exactly. Now, that is very different from someone else who is another comedian who wants to talk about, I am with my wife and I can't stand her, or we've discovered things about. So you have to play it in such a way that suits your own material. So I try not to. I've heard people talk about, next year in Edinburgh, people are going to be talking about COVID.
Oh my God.
The good thing is that you must identify your own unique selling point. I'm certainly not going to be talking about COVID when I go to Edinburgh.
Oh my God.
And I certainly don't talk about, I don't do it like I should do it.
Abonjo, can you imagine how many Edinburgh shows there are going to be with puns for, the first one that springs to mind, there's going to be a group of people and they're going to call themselves the Flu Man Group. And they're going to be like dressed in the atom of the like COVID molecule.
Exactly.
The B-52 flus. I mean, there's going to be, it's going to be overrun.
Yeah. But how many people can talk about being under house arrest by a civilian prime minister?
Is that
not many?
So has it been difficult? I mean, because, you know, you've gone from running a whole republic to being in lockdown arrest in the UK. Have you adapted well? Do you think you're well suited to lockdown, or are you glad that it's all over and it's starting to open back up?
It actually forced me to deliver my speeches on video, if that makes sense. So it's pushed me to do more video. So I have a weekly broadcast that I do, and I'm spending more time on Instagram and I'm using Facebook Live. But I think what is challenging for me, because you, as a character comedian, you have to be able to switch off. What I find really ridiculous, and my neighbors find it ridiculous, is, for example, there was a time I was doing a comedy sketch about Captain Tom, Remember Captain Tom, the guy who
raised the Somali money? Pirates?
The guy who raised money for NHS?
Yes.
Okay. So I tried to do something similar in my garden. And one of my neighbors saw me, and he was shaking his head because he didn't know I was a comedian. He just thought maybe, damn, the lockdown has really got him. Why would a black man be wearing a uniform and be walking in the garden and saying he wants to raise funds for the NHS? You understand what I'm saying? So my neighbors have now found out that I am a comedian and that I dress in the evening to entertain my audience. Do you see where I'm coming from? So that bit has been crazy. And then I look at myself and you know, at times my wife sees me when I am about to dress to change into uniform, and she shakes her head because I was never a president before she married me. Yeah? Yeah? 15 years ago when she married me, I was a civilian. Now all of a sudden, I'm calling myself President Obonjo. She knows damn well that this must be some midlife crisis.
But then, she has to respect the uniform.
And then what is really interesting is family members hearing your material. Oh. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because your material is not heard at home. And then all of a sudden, you are at home and you are... Yeah, I remember there was a comedian. I'm not going to go into his set, but he was really saying some really, really deep stuff. And my wife basically said, "Darling, wow, what type of comedy?"
There are some acts that really, instead of doing comedy, they'll just open up their crazy life for everyone to see.
But look. Different strokes for different people. Right. I don't want people thinking I'm criticizing. What we're just saying is talking about the experience of the lockdown. You know, be it you're wearing the uniform or you're entertaining your audiences, your family members see you dressing in uniform, your neighbors see you dressing in uniform. It's a different ball game entirely. And then you have to switch off because you can't be president in your house for too long.
Well, no. Can you imagine? Can you imagine your wife putting up with that?
Yeah. But the Zoom gigs are, for me, I think people should not rush to accept Zoom gigs. I think people should ask the comedy promoter, how is it going to work?
Yeah.
Do you think my act can work on this?
I think that's good advice.
Yeah.
And actually, what you're saying about treating it like it's like a new format. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
It's a different skill.
I haven't heard people say that before, so that's really interesting, actually. And it's like, why not practice this new skill instead of comparing it to the old and, you know, saying, oh, it's not as good. But like, but where does that get you? It's like, here we are now. We're only 6 months into a pandemic that could last for years. It's like, you adapt or die, exactly. Right?
And the thing about it is this. I don't know how often you were gigging, but... I gigged regularly. I mean, my weekends was gigging.
Yeah, you're
lockdown forced me. Lockdown forced me to reflect on, you've heard the saying, walking smarter rather than harder. Mm. Yeah?
Wait, what's the saying?
You have to walk smarter rather than harder.
Ah.
Yeah? So one of the things I picked up was when lockdown started, especially at weekends, I was saying to myself, wow, I have so much time now to do other things. However, why was I gigging like this every weekend? Boom, 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 boom. Mm. And there were three school... My view is that for the lockdown, there were three types of people. Mm. There were some people who realized this was an opportunity for me to actually reflect on where I've been with my comedy. So I'm not even going to do any Zoom gigs. I'm just going to take this time to enjoy life. Yeah? Mm. There were some people who just jumped at it very quickly. Mm. I'm doing Zoom gigs. And they have never, ever had a break. It's almost like having some kind of manic depression. They're not having a break. Yeah. And then the third one is people who dip in and out. Because I have to say to you, there were times when I will have gigs and I would say, oh, yeah, when did I book this? Because I feel that I should have a break. But I had to do it. So I have committed to doing it. So, because I know when this lockdown is over, I know that when we get busy, whatever that industry looks like, people are going to wish they had the time that they had during lockdown.
Yeah, That's so true. They'll look back and they'll be like, I had all this free time and I wasted it. It's so true.
I do not miss the late nights. I do not miss the bad eating. I do not miss driving and then there's a diversion and the journey that was going to take 1 hour is taking 2 hours. I do not miss the car journeys with comedians. you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So,
where you get fucking tickets for speeding because you go so fast, you're like, shut up, you idiot. I just want to go home.
I do not miss the travel costs. I mean, at one point, because I had some big gigs I was going to do during the lockdown, so I got refunds. You won't believe how much refunds I got from tickets that I had.
You had some big gigs lined up with Reginald D. Hunter, didn't you?
That was going to be the second time, and that I was going to support Reginald D. Hunter. I also was looking forward to, you know, performing because I'd written a show about what happened last year. The title of the show is called Stolen, and I was going to present it to people, to the world in August, but that's not happening. And that's why I'm not worried about COVID, because people will still want to hear my story next year.
I think so. From what you've teased on the show today, and I know you've got an announcement on Friday, there's some big news coming up. So I think I've wet some people's beaks here with possible, you know, very exciting news. I'm a bit mindful of your time because I know you've got to go at 8. So we'll wrap up a bit here. Just in sort of closing, what do you think of all the craziness that's gone on in the comedy industry recently? It seems like a lot of eating itself, a lot of implosion. Do you think that's just because we've not been able to perform and we've not had that support from the government?
I think there are a number of issues. For me, I have been very, very shocked.
Yeah.
And I have to say to you, I did not know it was happening. I genuinely did not know, because I am the sort of comedian who goes to perform, I do my performance, and I go home. I don't socialize. So I do not see these things. But I was really, really taken aback by not only the names mentioned, by the movement, which is a good thing. It is a good thing. Yeah. Amen. Let's not get this wrong.
Yeah.
I would describe it like Black Lives Matter, where, for example, if you experience someone being racist to another person, you should be able to challenge them. And that's what needs to happen in the industry. If there's any sexist remarks, no matter how you think it's going to affect you, or you think that, okay, you won't be booked by this promoter, you should challenge them as a man. You should challenge them as a man. I think that's really, really important. So I have been extremely shocked. I genuinely believe that this is going to be really, really tough for male comedians now. Apart from the fact that male comedians have to behave themselves. Do you understand what I'm saying? But I think there will be some kind of recorrection. I call it like a stock market crash, where women will definitely be getting those spots moving forward in the future, just to redress the balance.
That seems like a good thing. It seems like it's been...
And I believe that is a good thing. But you make a point, which I will agree with you on. And that is why you need to question, why has it taken the lockdown for this to happen?
Yeah.
Because if we were all gigging, you will be hearing these things quietly, but they wouldn't have come out in public. I certainly was really shocked to see Joe Rogan's podcast. I don't know if that's where I saw someone basically boasting about how he gets gigs. When I saw that, I was really, really shocked. And
disgusting.
I just thought, he has opened the Pandora box.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Pandora box is going to be open. I never expected it to affect the United Kingdom. When I saw it all happening in the United Kingdom, I was horrified. And I said to myself, who are these people that I gig with? Because, who are these people?
I know.
Why is the industry in such a state? But like I said, moving forward, it is a good thing. And my advice to anyone listening to this, if you experience that sort of thing, and you witness it, challenge them.
Challenge them.
Because
that's right.
Challenge, because it affects all male comedians. All male comedians are being tagged.
Yeah, and I think now, going forwards, it seems like the industry may be shedding some old skin. And now if before you didn't feel safe to challenge, maybe now you will feel a bit more safe to challenge, knowing that more people will back you up. And that maybe this kind of behavior, this predatory behavior that's so disgusting, is on its way out. And it can be, you know, we were forced into hibernation from forces beyond our control. But because of that, we might emerge from it stronger. I don't know. That sounds optimistic, but I hope so, President.
You have to be optimistic. But look, I genuinely thought that COVID was going to be the threat to the comedy industry. Actually, it wasn't just COVID. It was the sex pests. Yeah? They have ruined, you know, and damaged the industry, and it needs to recover.
Yeah.
And the only way it can recover is for everyone to abide by a code of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to abide by a code of conduct and behave. People need to behave. Male comedians need to behave.
That's the thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Take responsibility for their actions and for things that they see. And don't be afraid. Because at the end of the day, you know what's really interesting about all of this? Is all of us have been running around. I certainly have been running around for 10 years. I'm going to leave you with this. Does comedy really, really matter? Is it really a matter of life and death? I would say no. Since March, nobody has been gigging. Most people haven't been earning anything since March.
Mm.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're a pro comic, a semi-comic, a semi-pro, an amateur, starting the day. It doesn't matter what type of comic you are. Everybody has been put on the same level right now.
Right.
And either they're zooming it or they haven't got the energy to do anything because they're affected by the fact that they're not performing. What does that actually say?
Hmm.
What does that actually mean for the industry? We go on about, you know, it's the audiences. The audiences, certainly for me, I can speak for myself. It's the audiences who have carried me in this industry.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. That's why I love live performance so much. It's why on any kind of stage, you know, I do theater and stuff. I was in the West End when COVID shut us all down, and it was, I immediately was like, I need to find a way to connect with an audience again. And I think a lot of performers have been feeling that. And it's like, maybe that's part of the reason you're doing your weekly announcements.
Exactly. Because the challenge that I have faced as a president is that my people want to hear from me, because that's what I picked up. Because once I finished on stage before COVID, people will be on my fan page interacting with me. So I had no choice but to continue to interact with my audience. And I have to say to you, they have been my strength. The fact that I have fans and I have audiences who are my backbone, and I know whenever I post anything, they're going to comment about it.
Well, we've all got your back here at the Bliss of the Abyss.
How many of them are ready to die for me?
We will test it. Forget this democracy. Let's get some sign-ups for this holy war that's coming. Do you have some final words for people listening who are big fans of yours, who are anxious to see what's happening next? Can you tease them anything? Can you give them support? Can you give them love? Can you give them hope?
Yeah, I just want to say, I want to thank everybody. I don't know how many of your listeners you've got. How many listeners have you got?
15.
15. We have to improve it. But I just want to say, if there are any of your listeners out there, Kiffin is, they need to make sure they wear their mask.
Yes.
And they should thank their stars that I'm not in power. Because if I was in power, there will be no debate about whether we have to wear a mask or not. It will be mandatory. Anyone who does not wear their mask will be shot.
Up against the wall. Yes.
Against the wall. And I really do mean that. Because, you know, when I look at democracy in this country, democracy is like a virus. It's a vaccine. It's a virus. And we need to flatten the curve. And we need to use the vaccine. We need a vaccine to get rid of
the virus. And the vaccine... And the vaccine is dictatorship, and you will be distributing it.
It is the Obonga dictatorship. Because why would, look, the mask, for example, people said they should wear,
China were wearing the mask in the 22nd of January this year, they were wearing the mask. Look how long it's taking Britain to agree that the mask needs to be worn. And then they're still debating. They still want a green paper and white paper. Oh, we need to encourage people. We need people with common sense. It does not work. Democracy is shit.
Strong, strong, powerful words to leave with, President Obonjo. It has
masks.
Wear those masks. Yeah, you know, you should start manufacturing some with, you know, get your name on people's faces. Your loyal army.
That is a good idea. I actually have some military masks.
Yeah, you know what to do.
That is a good idea. I am actually going post on my fan page and ask my fans if they will buy a mask with my name on
it. Some merch. Yep.
Because President Trump, after how many months, is now wearing a mask and he has a presidential seal.
There we go. Listen, President Obonjo, your time is precious, I know, and I do not want to be shot. So I'm going to put on my mask and I'm going to wish you a good evening, sir. Thank you very much for being on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Let me know when you publish it, and I hope you get many likes. And I think this has been a really, really good show.
Great.
Fantastic. Better than Joe Rogan's podcast.
Thank you. You're a diamond. You're an angel. Nice one.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Take care. All right.
Bye.
Yes. What a star. Thank you, President. I'm going to post links to... His Instagram, Facebook, etc. Sign up and watch out for this Friday for the big announcement on the year of the anniversary of the attempted coup, as if they could ever oust the real Presidente. Salutations to you. Just before I go, just want to recommend a couple of TV shows I've been watching this week. Succession is absolutely excellent, written by one of the writers, I think it's Jesse Armstrong, of Peep Show. It's not a new show, but I've only just watched it, and it's excellent. A new show that I have watched, that what's the point in recommending it, because everyone's going to recommend it, is I May Destroy You. It's really good. And other than that, I would just say thanks for listening to this show. I hope you've had a good one this week. I hope you've enjoyed listening to all of this nonsense, and that you put it down after you finish with it and you go and give yourself a pat on the back and maybe, you know, have a little reach around and see what's downstairs and have fun there. But no, that's not right, is it? Maybe go and find someone you love and give them a kiss right on their big fat face. Or, failing all of that, have yourself a good week. And you know what? I'll see you soon on the Bliss of the Abyss. Thank you for listening to the show. That was The Bliss of the Abyss. All music provided by the incredibly talented Nils Hennis-Steer. If you have anything you'd like to say, positive or negative, send it to theblissoftheabyss@gmail.com, and I'll see you soon. We'll be right back.
long season of the year in now, but I guess not. So I guess I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good night. Talk to you then. Bye.